time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames hockey talk.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, hosted by myself, Brad Brute, and Kyle Lewis. And Kyle, it is a quiet summer in Calgary.
Very, yeah. It's actually, well, it's quiet everywhere recently, apart from a couple trades last week, but very, very quiet in Calgary.
Oof. I don't know. I mean, we got so spoiled last year with all the fun news.
I mean, for that reason, we've been quiet too, right? We're a little bit later on the show than we intended on being, but
we are. A week or two, week later than what we intended, you know? But I mean, I don't know. It's so off season, and you know, we are going to take a break. This is our, get this out of the way, this is our last show of this season, and then we're going to be back mid-September with the launch of Season 5, and Kyle will be back again, and that is great, great news, and we're super excited for bigger, better things next year as we continue to grow and work with this podcast.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. We've had a lot of good ideas and some suggestions, and just got to roll it all together.
Yeah, and that's what I'm working on right now, and Kyle and I are bouncing off ideas and coming up with some fun stuff that it has me really excited. And I'll tell you what, the other night I went outside, not today. Today's humid as hell and hot, but the other night there was that fall crisp air, and I was like,
last night we had that, yeah.
Man, it gets me thinking hockey, boy. It really does. It does. And I'm excited.
Our emails are circulating for our pickup group too. Like, hey guys, first available ice time is early October. It's like, God, am I really reading this? And I, you know, like I said, you go outside in the evening a lot of time later now, it's cool. And it's like, holy crap. Like, where'd the summer go?
Our junior hockey team inter-squad scrimmage this Saturday night. I'm already like, I get to go watch hockey this Saturday. I get to help out. And oh, it's just fun. It's fun to get back. I like the break because God knows after last season we needed it. But
poof, yeah. Although, I guess I'll use that as a segue into what I've been up to. And anybody who follows me on social media is likely seeing I have acquired a few more of last season's game-worn items. So the first of which, for those of you watching on YouTube, is my Trevor Lewis game worn helmet.
This is a great. I love this. This helmet is really, really nice, and it's got
nice. But his head is so small.
It would fit me, Kyle. It would fit me.
You have that small head.
I have a small head. Close. Look at that. You know what's funny? You know what I like about that though? And we talked about this, but we didn't mention this, but I like that it has the Flames logos and not an advertisement. Yeah.
Oh yeah, like, or the Scotiabank.
It could, now, at least in
the Flames, the Scotiabank, it was subtle.
It looked good. It did. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
But it's still nice to have your team's logo on there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the other thing, and this was anything but free, but it's very rare and well worth it, courtesy of Evan Carlisle in Ontario, is he reluctantly parted with the reverse retro Trevor Lewis game worn from last season. So this one was worn only those four games in December. So not much wear, but it's a gorgeous jersey.
It is.
One of the cooler things that people don't always see in the reverse retros is in the collar, it actually has the year, 1995, when the pedestal was introduced. Same as the reverse retro, the Blasty from a couple years ago, has 1998 in the collar. So there's a lot of really
minor, I didn't know that.
Yeah, like really small details in the reverse retros that kind of make them, you know, a little more rare than they already are. So thank you very much, Evan, for hooking me up with that. And now I am just going to continue to try to work over the guy that has Lewis's Blasty and try to get that next.
Speaking of Blasty, I got him in the background. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. Is Blasty back next year? You know, really no announcements that I've heard. So that's going to be interesting to see.
Well, it is. And I think the thing is for a logo that was almost universally hated, it's kind of, well, it's a funny analogy to pop in my head. It's kind of like Blade Runner with Harrison Ford. He hated that movie, but Blade Runner had such a close cult following, right? And Blasty was very similar.
You know, it was one of those jersey logos that you either loved it or hated it. I hated it. Everybody knows that listens to this show. Like, I'm the more traditionalist guy. Like, it just didn't fit my style. I wasn't like appalled by it. I didn't hate it like I hated the frickin' Ronald McDonald Heritage Classic jersey we wore that one year. But this jersey was not, it wasn't one of my favorites, I guess.
How'd you feel about the word script jersey for the the team, the two, you know, 2015 seasons.
Didn't hate it, to be honest with you, Kyle. But now when I look back on it, I'm not a huge fan. But I, at the time, I didn't hate it. I didn't.
I just sold mine, my TJ Brody game.
Yeah, from 15, I saw that.
16. And it, actually, I quite liked it. It grew on me, especially where I had it hanging in my closet here. But the guy wanted it, and I wanted to get this Lewis jersey. But yeah, I didn't hate that one either. But I guess back to the Blasty thing, it did so well when they brought it back. Like, it sold really well with the Fanatic, and you know, fans really seem to embrace it. I find it hard to believe they'd part with it entirely at this point. I think it's always kind of going to be in the background, but I guess we'll know sooner than later.
I sure as hell hope they don't do as a third patch or a shoulder patch or something. That would,
unless it was in the context of the 04 jerseys, right? The red and white with the Blasty shoulder patch. Yeah. Cause those, you know, people are starting to clamor for those to come back too.
Yeah, you know what people in Calgary are just clamoring for? Freaking winning. And that's the jersey we remember them winning. That's what it is, Kyle. That's what it is.
Yeah, and that's definitely a good point. Actually, speaking of that, that's a good segue to something else I asked you the other day. We haven't spoken about this yet, so we played around with it before, the idea of talking about just a random Flames player that we think of fondly or remember fondly or just pops in our head or just somebody we think from time to time. So there's always the obvious ones, the star players and the, you know, the guys that put up some points here, whatever, but I'll go first because it kind of ties into the jerseys we just talked about. But for some reason, the first player I thought of that I wanted to talk about was Roman Hamrlich.
You almost forget he was a Flame. When you say Roman Hamrlich, I think Tampa Bay Lightning. What do you think?
Yeah, Tampa Bay, and I think he was in Montreal. I remember in Washington, yeah. Tampa Bay. You know, mostly what he was known for. But the reason he kind of stood out to me was he had a great slap shot for one. Mm-hmm. But he also was tasked with mentoring Dion Phaneuf his first couple seasons in the league. And Hamrlich was only here for two seasons.
Yeah.
But performed very admirably and was a fairly popular Flame at the time. So, anyway, that's, you know, don't have a whole lot to say about the guy. It's just like, you know, hey, remember him? So I'm going to throw it over to you.
You know, my obscure Flame guy. You know who he is? Sean Donovan.
Oh, you love him so much.
I do. Why did I like him? I looked at his numbers today. I looked at his numbers today, and I'm like, geez, I had to have been drinking a lot back then.
Yeah.
He did not put up a lot of numbers. I mean, he had three seasons in Calgary. His first year after being acquired from Pittsburgh, he had 3 points in 13 games. And then the next year, he played 82 games. He did. He had his career year, 18 goals, 24 assists, 42 points. After that, nothing.
Yeah. I think if you were to put Sean Donovan, Matthew Lombardi, and Dean McAmmond on a line together with the Flames, you would have the fastest line that Calgary ever produced.
You find me a Donovan game-worn jersey, and I may buy it. I may start the collection.
I'm going to buy it for you.
You find me one.
It's going to be tough. I saw one a few years ago. I can't remember who had it, but I'll
that might be tough. But you got connections, man. You got connections.
It's a big community, but it's a tight community. You, basically, if you're a part of any game worn sports jersey community, you know, everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows who they sold to. Actually, that Denny Gauthier that I have, the white one from 0304, belonged to Nick Moore. He had that in his collection for a while. The other thing, too, is like if you're going to sell one, like I listed a David Rittich not long ago, and people will chime in and say, hey, post this in the LA Kings game worn. So even if it's a Flames jersey, but it's now a Kings player.
Yep,
people are still interested. You know, people collect jerseys of the same player across.
You might like even get some bites in Winnipeg on him.
Oh yeah, yeah, but you know, this is a guy that's got. I mean, Mark Recchi is a, you know, a Hall of Famer, but this is a guy that's got like 40 Recchi jerseys. It's crazy,
isn't that? Like, I follow those groups on Facebook too, and I'm in them, and I'm not a collector of jerseys, but I could easily be influenced into this. Oh, I'm scared.
It's expensive to build an inventory. Once you have one, though, and you're willing to part with things, you basically just, you know, break even and get players you want, trade jerseys out, get different styles. It's fun, and it's cool to see, just to see what people have. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun. I love looking at it, and I'm like, yeah, I see jerseys on there all the time. It's like, man, that's a cool find.
So there's a guy that actually had posted about EA Sports, like the NHL series, cover athletes, right?
Yeah.
And he had the exact Colorado Avalanche Peter Forsberg game worn jersey that he's wearing on the cover of, I think it was NHL 96. and it's photo matched. Like, it's pretty cool. So that's a really rare jersey, right?
So like,
it's like if I owned the Blasty jersey that Iginla had on the cover of NHL 2002. It's kind of neat.
So when some of these guys display these, do they display them in a case and then have a picture that like a photo match picture in the case to really even show it even more?
So yeah, some do. Some guys will just put them in a shadow box. Some guys don't, you know, put them in a case at all because they like to handle them and look at them or sell them or whatever.
Or have so many of them.
Well, yeah, like I got a good friend of mine. He's got, God, he must have 200 jerseys. Like, it's insane. He actually has a seat from the Montreal Forum signed by Patrick Waugh in his basement.
Oh. You know,
it's pretty cool.
I think there's a show in Toronto and a game worn, and I think it's like all equipment, game worn NHL all equipment. I would love to go to that. That would be a lot of fun to go to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we all get different memories of different pieces of equipment. Like, what's that? Was it a Vegas player last year getting that fight? Remember we talked about his jersey? He got torn at the neck of the fight.
Who was that? It doesn't matter, but we talked about it. I remember it was really
Colasar, maybe?
Yeah.
It was just a rag, but anyway. But I mean, that jersey, if it wasn't destroyed, is going to fetch some pretty serious coins somewhere. But yeah, just cool stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, apart from all the conversation we just had, obviously we talked about how slow things have been in Calgary. Mm-hmm. Not so much around the league because we've seen, that big three-way trade between Pittsburgh, Montreal, and San Jose. And then Montreal flipping Patriot to Detroit. Like, there's still stuff happening. But for the Flames, it's slower, but there's still a lot of talks of unresolved things. So what do you want to start with
Start with the Lindholm talk. And that won't be a lot to talk about because I think it's a lot of overblown.
Well, it hasn't changed much, right?
Well, so all of a sudden now, last week, reports come from insiders saying that he's more open to signing in Calgary, which before it was, no, he's not signing in Calgary. Now he's open to it. I think he's always been open, dude. I just think it's like, I don't know. I listened to the Tyler Toffoli thing on Spittin' Chicklets today. If you haven't done that, please do, because it's good. But he said, like, it didn't matter what happened in Calgary last year. Every time something happened, it just got overblown like 50 times. He's like, he commented on, you know, Sutter's reaction to Peltier's first game in the press conference, which I thought was kind of Bush League. But Toffoli's like, honestly, he goes, in the locker room, that really was not a big issue. But
that's just how Daryl is, right? At the time, you and I said the same thing. Like, this is kind of overblown. Was it disrespectful and unnecessary? Sure. But sure. I mean, was it the end of the world? No.
No.
Far from it.
But I don't know. And the Lindholm thing, we keep hearing the number $9 million. That's what it is, keep getting. And I have such mixed feelings on that. I'd feel much more comfortable. And I know it's only $1 million and people are going to be like, you can't find, you know, first line centers all over the place. And I believe he's a first line center, but I also believe he's not a driver. He needs help. So, you know, I'd feel a whole hell of a lot more comfortable like at $8 million, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so either. Somebody threw it off. You would take 6 at 7.5. Do you do it? You're an idiot if you don't do that deal.
All day, oh my day, gosh, I would.
But that deal is never going to be on the table.
No, and
that's the problem, right? There's so few number one centers. Which with him, you know, in my opinion, it's borderline debatable. He's certainly not an elite center in my mind. But no. He's very good.
I think he's
right.
Well, and I think he brings intangibles that are not measurable in statistics a lot of time. And so that makes it harder for us to, like, you know, it sadly in the NHL we pay off like the statistics on the internet, right? We don't pay a lot of off, you know, like, how is he in the faceoff dot? How is he on the penalty kill? You know, is he a good locker room guy? Is he, you know, there's so many more other intangibles that just get forgotten. And I think Lindholm kind of checks the boxes on all those.
Yeah, absolutely, it does.
But
no, there's no question.
I don't know. I'm real hesitant to give a player $9+ million that I wouldn't consider dynamic. Is that bad to say?
No, it's completely fair. The problem is like a lot of things right now, the market value is very inflated, as it often is with centers because they cost a premium because there's not that many really good ones out there. Which is partly why the Toronto Maple Leafs just shelled out an absolute shitload of money to Austin Matthews.
So let's talk about this. This just dropped about an hour-ish before we recorded, hour and a half maybe. I have an initial reaction, but I'm way more excited to hear your initial reaction.
Well, I've been just typing ha 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 on every platform and social media out there.
You really think so? I don't know that this is a bad deal for them.
You can't spend that much money on a single player unless it's Connor McDavid. You just can't.
And you're going to think I'm... Well, we're going to maybe go round and round here, Kyle. I think that if he would have told them, I want 15 and I'm walking if I don't get it, I think they would have signed the check on 15.
Probably, but it's still stupid. They're never going to win a Stanley Cup signing a guy to that kind of term. I mean, the term's not bad, but that kind of money, it's just not going to happen.
The term is in favor of Matthews in a way that he can really bankroll that over into more.
Yeah, give the Coyotes time to build a new arena.
You know, well, that's been the talk, but I don't ever think that happens. I don't
actually believe that, but I mean, time will tell. I mean, whether it's Matthews or anybody else, I just think it's incredibly stupid and irresponsible of Brad Treliving to fork over that kind of cash for a guy who has never made it past the second round. Barely made it to the second round this time around, the first time, right?
And I agree, but Bane, devil's advocate to that. If he doesn't re-sign him, hell breaks loose in Toronto.
Yeah, probably, but still, I don't see that guy as being a winner anywhere else. He's a very dynamic offensive player, but what else does he do? Like, I don't see it.
I haven't said he's overrated, but sometimes I feel like he is.
We left a guy out of a bar in Prince of Rhode Island a few years ago because he insinuated that Matthews was as good as Connor McDavid. That's delusional. We all know it. But that is just so much money for a single player. And I kind of liken it to, you know, paying a goaltender $10 million plus. You're never going to win a cup if you pay a goalie that much. You just aren't.
I agree. I agree with you. And it's actually been proven. We've looked at the numbers, and I think we talked about it on one of the previous episodes that teams...
Sidney Crosby at $8.7 million is about as team-friendly a deal as you could possibly have.
Yep.
Even at his age, actually we're the same age, he's 36 now, he's still worth that money.
I think so.
Yep. But man, that's so much coin. Anyway, what was your reaction to it? I mean, you kind of tipped your hand a little bit, but tell me more.
I thought that, honestly, I thought he was going to take him to the cleaners even more. I did. I thought he was going to just lay the hammer down and say, I got a pen here and I'm willing to sign at 15, and if you're not, then I'm okay leaving. Because I'm not winning here anyways.
Is there a cap on individual salaries?
You know, there is. What is it? I'm trying to think of what it is. Oh, Kyle, we should have known this.
Well, we didn't typically have to because nobody seems to go near it.
There is. I can't remember what the number is, though. You don't hear anybody talking about it, though, do you?
No.
This puts...
Oh, they cannot... Okay, for 21-22 season, apparently, at a salary cap of 81.5, no player can earn more than 16.3.
Okay, so it's probably 17-ish right now. So he could have written down...
Yeah, I mean, it moved incrementally. Yeah, wow.
He could have wrote down 15. And I'm not joking. Treliving would have had to sign it. He would have.
Disgusting.
Well, you want to know what's more disgusting? I don't know if they win, he is. If they lose, he's not. I mean, I could say that about every player.
He's not, because they're not going to win.
Well, so do you think Drew Doughty's worth $11
million? Oh, Lord, no. Drew Doughty is terrible.
Well, I'm just looking at the top 10. Is Panarin worth 11.6?
No.
If they win, he is. I don't know.
Well,
I
mean, okay, hang on now. If they win, doesn't mean he was that responsible for them winning.
No,
right?
But we judge people on that, though.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, good
we
Lord.
Do.
I mean,
think about this. Somebody brought this up to me. Name me a goalie. Okay, what is it? They said to me, what does it take before you look at a goalie and you determine that they are a true number one? And it's winning a cup.
That's a little heavy-handed, I think. Connor Hellebuck's a pure number one goaltender.
Jacob Markstrom hasn't won a cup either.
Henrik Lundqvist, one of the best goaltenders that ever won a cup.
Yeah,
came pretty damn, and all these guys have come pretty close. Well, Markstrom no, but
Markstrom was closer than you think in that COVID garbage playoff in Vancouver. He took a Canucks team that was mediocre at best.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, like those guys, like there's no question. Now, this is similar to the talk we had about Mike Vernon, right? Like when you outduel the best goaltenders in the game and win playoff MVP and individual awards and Stanley Cups, then you're a class all your own. So there's a difference between elite goaltenders and number one goaltenders.
I'm agreeing with you on this more. The more I think about it as I talk with you, I'm agreeing with you more.
Dominic Hasek never. Oh yeah, won a cup with the Red Wings, but yeah. Hasek was an elite.
Won a cup with the Sabres almost too, right?
Pretty much on his own, you know.
Yeah.
That wasn't a terrible Sabres team by any stretch, but he was that good. But there's a lot of goaltenders that are really, really good number ones. I don't know that, but it's tough, man. Like that's a position that's easy to put a lot of weight on.
It solidifies younger goalies quick that they're stars.
Oh, Matt Murray.
Well, 100%. Ed Belfour.
What the hell happened to Cam Ward after he won that cup in Carolina? Not very much.
Nothing.
Not very much good anyway. Ed Belfour, fantastic goaltender.
Yeah, but that solidified him right away because coming out of North Dakota in college, he wasn't a highly touted goaltending prospect, you know.
No, look at Tim Thomas. He was a super late bloomer, right?
Yeah.
But goaltenders they're just like their personalities, man. They are weird. Their development is almost impossible to track. Like we're only starting to have reason now to believe that Dustin Wolf is actually a really good prospect because he's played well at every level. Like if you're a good junior goaltender, it doesn't mean a goddamn thing in the pro ranks.
Doesn't mean anything. That's why
Tyler Parsons, we're all pretty high.
That's why I was a little hotter. No, I was a little back the train up a little bit last year with all this Wolf talk of like, come on here, guys. Like, let's like, I believe me, I want him to be a stud too, but like, we can't start writing him off and putting the pressure on him that he's a stud before he gets some freaking bulk of games. Right. I mean,
Well, since we're talking about him for a moment, I'm my only concern with him, I think he's going to be damn good and a really good number one in the league. But I don't know how a goaltender plays like he does is going to have any length of a really successful career. I mean, beyond his first 10 years, because, man, his game is so predicated on athleticism. Oof. You watch the way that kid warms up, his lateral movement. Positionally, obviously, he's very strong, especially for such a small guy. But, man, like that is going to be some hard in the body as you age.
So
he's like Gumby right now, but, you know, let's see him at 32.
Let's talk about Pacific Division goalies a little bit. When you look at the goaltenders in the division, do you not rank ours up there as arguably the best? Let me run through the goalies in the Pacific. As of today's rosters, Gibson and Stalock in Anaheim, Skinner and Campbell in Edmonton, Copley and Talbot in L.A., Kukkonen and Blackwood in San Jose, Grubauer and Decord in Seattle, Demko and Silvas in Vancouver, and Hill and Thompson in Vegas.
What's the status on Robin Leonard?
I made this prediction on my other podcast. I don't think he plays another game in the NHL.
They may not. Regardless, even if he was in the pitcher, I don't think there's a better tandem there. Now, individually, and this is where goaltending gets interesting, right? I think you can make the argument that John Gibson has been the best of the bunch.
But he's on a struggling, miserable team.
Yep, with an absolute career backup. Stalock hit a ceiling years ago.
I still like the Kings tandem. I do. I like the Kings tandem.
I do, too. Talbot's a 1B. I mean, he always has been, but apart from one or two good seasons.
Talbot's that guy, and he did it in Calgary. He gets hot, and he gets on a 15-game heater, and he's just unstoppable.
Yeah.
Vancouver.
Phoenix Copley, that's still kind of unknown.
Yeah.
The Sharks actually have a fairly interesting tandem that could surprise some people.
We'll see. I think we have the best.
The Oilers, I don't think they have great goaltending really at all.
No, that's their one weakness. Well, I think we have the best tandem in the Pacific.
Yeah. Well, and I think we do, regardless of which one the backup is, whether it's Vladar or ends up being Wolf.
It's mix or match.
And this is predicated on the widespread belief that Jacob Markstrom is going to rebound to some extent, and he pretty well has to.
I think he will.
Yeah. We all do.
I have no reason to believe that he won't.
Huberdeau and Markstrom are going to have very, very good bounce-back years.
So does Huberdeau. I'm going to throw something out there real quick. Projected points on NHL.com for Huberto next year is 78. Does he go over or under that?
That's pretty damn. I was going to put him at about 75.
I put him at 80. So I'm going over.
Yeah. If he, you know, if somebody, if Sharon Govich breaks out or something like that, then I think he's 85. The days of 100 plus are gone, but we don't need 100 plus from him.
Nope, we don't.
You know, if we didn't need 100 plus from Gaudreau or Tkachuk, but it's great that we got it. It was fun. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Which, and I guess that's the other thing. So his name gets batted around with this too. And I know you and I have talked about this, and everybody's talking about it. Ryan Huska talked about it. Mackenzie Weegar just talked about it. The captain talk.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that.
So Jonathan Huberto, I think, has taken on such a strong role with the team in terms of being a leader that he's an automatic candidate.
Mackenzie Weegar's
my pick, but sorry, go ahead.
Mackenzie Weegar's been, bantered around a lot lately after he...
He answered it directly yesterday, the Fan 960, yesterday before.
Yeah, he said that he would want to be captain.
He said he'd be honored, it would be a pleasure. And he, man, he was, especially in the second half last year, man, he was good.
Was he not the captain of the World Championships last year for Team Canada?
You know what? I paid so little attention to that tournament, that does sound familiar.
I believe he was, though. I believe he was a captain.
Yeah. I will say this.
That's a 14-day sample size, but I mean.
Yeah, still, but there's a reason he, you know, of all those pros, there's a reason he was picked.
Yeah.
But for all the talk about, you know, if Backlund stays, he should be captain because he's longest tenured. To me, with the, you know, these elite players that are already signed long-term, unless you're going to go with somebody like Erasmus Anderson, maybe, who's, you know, been a very good homegrown player for the Flames, I like the idea of Huberto or Weegar.
I was very pro Backlund, and I've always been a Backlund fan. I guess if you asked me today and held the gun to my head and said, who's your favorite Flame currently, I'd probably have to say Backlund. Do I think Backlund's part of our future? I don't know. I'm back and forth on it all the time. If we can get him at a decent price, yeah, I think he is part of the future, and I think he's a good asset for the future. But I am starting to come off my Backlund for captain rant a little bit and thinking that maybe Huberto is a guy that you can do that, but you know, here's my fear there. Does that put more pressure on a player coming off of a year where he was just lambasted by the media and the fans and everybody for his horrible season?
I don't know. Because at the end of the day, he's still a star player that chose to sign long term in Calgary.
No, I agree. I think we both have good arguments there.
Yeah. You know, the way he's bringing along Jacob Pelletier, you know, his involvement in the community. You know, actually, to dumb with Huberto, interesting, I'm not sure if you saw, but of all the free agent, you know, frenzy and all that throughout the summer, somebody who, I forget who it was, but they'd signed in Florida and had elected to take jersey number 11, Huberto's old number with the Panthers.
Really?
But he switched. Because apparently, despite the, you know, jokes about the Panthers not having a very... you know, passionate fan base, they must, because apparently some people were quite upset that he was wearing Huberto's old number 11.
I did not see that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's really interesting. So,
I don't know.
I think he's a good candidate for it, and I think Weegar is too. I'd be happy with either one of those guys, because to me, they're still relatively new to the team. This team's going to change direction. They lost some really important key pieces. New direction.
People are kind of freaking, though, that we haven't named a captain. I don't know if it's time and a place to name a captain, is it?
Name it captain in training camp.
Yes, that's what I think, too.
Get the guys together, yeah.
I don't think now is the time to be throwing out captain naming. I mean, I think people in Calgary are just... We're just starving for freaking progress and news and hope right now that... I don't know. Sure. I think we just need to relax. I mean, we're 3 weeks... What are we? 3-4 weeks... From camp opening, I think it's three, something like that, 3 weeks.
But you got to get the gang together and let them sort it out. I mean, most of your coaching staff is new, your GM's new. Who's in a position to name a captain right now? And if you do it based on, let's say, Michael Backlund signs an extension, well, you name him captain. That's ridiculous.
I think it's I'm all for Backlund. And if he is captain, I'm going to be really happy. But I don't know. I just think you get to camp and you know what? Honestly, you go through all your games at camp, right? And then after the games and you're in that between the time the games at camp end and the opening night, you name your captain.
Well, yeah, I mean, but let them get to camp. You're going to name your captain. And the thing is, this year, we all know they're naming a captain. They've said as much, right?
Yep.
everybody goes to camp. Everybody, you know, makes their best bid, to, you know, the best camp they can. Huberto, Uyghur, Backlund, Anderson, Lindholm, maybe Kadri. They might all show, you know, earning consideration for that. And you know what? You decide who your captain's going to be. As far as your assistant captains go, maybe you do a two on the road and two at home, four different guys. If everybody is, we feel that you have that much of blue, like Tanev, we know is probably going to wear a letter.
You know, we just need to be happy that we have. You just named off six candidates for captain. Can you do that in Vancouver? They don't have a captain either.
Yeah, true.
I'm just saying we should probably be happy in Calgary. We have enough guys to consider. I mean, heck, if a couple guys resign, Lindholm could be captain too, right?
Yeah, I just think it was always a weak argument when they'd say like, oh, like, you know, this team is full of leaders. We don't need a captain. I'm like, come on. Put the C on somebody. Show you have, you know, believe in somebody as, you know, the leader of your team. I never like that, right? I mean,
in hindsight, it was probably good that we didn't, though, because we probably would have named the wrong guy.
Oh, maybe so. Yeah. I mean, there's different arguments you made for
it. I'm big enough captain. I agree with what you said in theory, but now after knowing how miserable last year went and the turmoil and everything, it's probably good that we don't, you know? So,
I don't disagree with that.
I got a question for you. Oliver Shillington's coming back after a year off. And the previous season, he was very good. But going into that camp, he was unknown if he was going to be part of the team. He was maybe possibly a waiver guy.
Yep.
I pray that the Oliver Shillington that was paired with Tanev comes back. But is there
he sounds highly, highly motivated.
He sounds really motivated, but who doesn't, though, coming back after a year off?
Yeah, but I mean, it could be even better. You know, obviously he was having some mental health issues. I mean, he talked about it. I guess that's one of the topics that we, you know, we hadn't talked much about, you know, off air was, you know, Shillington talking about what was wrong. Mm-hmm. He's arguably the best skater on the team. He's just a gifted skater. So it's hard to believe he'd be anything less than what he was, apart from, you know, he's got to have a good camp. I mean, he's already, from what we've seen on his Instagram, he looks to be in great shape. But he's going to put in a good camp and try to shake the rust off. But, you know, I fully expect him to be on the first power play unit. I expect 40 to 50 points. I think he's going to have a big year. I feel like he feels like he owes the team for that missed season too. Well, it's one of the things that we need because that was our transition game sucked last year. And as much as we talk about Gaudreau and Tkachuk, his absence was certainly felt too.
Speaking of defensemen, I want to talk about one more thing that happened today. As Edmonton re-signed Evan Bouchard for a 2-year, $3.9 million deal. And it's a hell bridge. It's a bridge, but it's a hell of a value for them for the next 2 years because he's the guy that I think took the power play over the top because now it's not just worrying about Dreisaitl and McDavid. You got to worry about him back there. So he's there for two more years and then they're going to have to write a fat ass check. But I thought that was a pretty good signing. I really did. I thought it was a really good signing.
Well, it is because, I mean, Edmonton also thinks that their window to win is now.
Right? It is.
So they're not in a position to have doled out a big money contract to him at this juncture because they still have to fill their team with guys I think they'll put them over the top. So it's a great deal for them. It's a smart, you know, I hate that phrase, oh, player betting on himself. Well, no, it's this is the deal that he's probably apt to get based on his age and performance as far.
I think he probably went home at night and said, all right, do I believe this team can win? Yeah. Do I want to be part of that? Yeah. I'm a huge contributing factor to this team. $3.9 million sounds all right for 2 years, and I probably want $9 million, $10 million. Yeah. Cap will be going up. Who knows? He may be get a guy that gets $11
million. Could be.
I know that sounds ludicrous, but I don't know. Maybe.
Well, it's look not. At the money that Darnell Nurse is making. Darnell Nurse or we talked about Drew Doughty. Like, man, that Nurse deal is one of the worst in the league. Holy crap, that's a bad deal.
He is such a liability in his zone. It's just
I cannot understand why they ever thought he was worth that kind of money.
It's crazy.
It really is. I'm upset of a half of Oilers fans, and I shouldn't care at all.
Yeah.
Wild.
I don't know. It's been quiet, but it's not a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we've kept in touch the last 2 weeks. Just there wasn't really, it wasn't a ton happening, as we said, but it's still stuff to discuss. We're still on the eve of training camp season, we might call it. And we talked about, how we wanted to kind of, share some of our interests, some music and some stuff a little bit more.
Let's talk music. A couple Friday nights ago, actually a week and a half ago, I went to a Alice Cooper, Motley Crue, Def Leppard concert.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Here's my rundown on it.
Three of my favorites as well, especially Def Leppard and Alice Cooper.
Here's my rundown on it. I don't know if I'm getting old, but having three big bands like that in a row is a long show for me. That's 6 hours of music.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long time. 5:45 at night, Alice Cooper started. And he was unbelievable. Like, every time I watch him, I like Alex.
76 years old. His newest album, Road, comes out this Friday. That's wild.
I like his music, I can't say I love his music. I like his music, But when I see him in concert, it's the second time I've seen him. I'm just mind blown. It is an unbelievable show.
I've always said about Alice Cooper, everyone will always find one Alice Cooper song at least that they like. And he is one of the best songwriters that I enjoy for sure. There's 50 albums of his or so downstairs, between live albums, compilations, studio albums. I'm a huge fan.
What's your favorite album of his?
Oof. Well, you kind of get to split the original band from his solo career, right? So original band, I'd probably go with Love at the Death because I love the vibe on that record. And then from his solo stuff, I like some of the weird early 80s stuff. There's some real gems there, but as an album, probably The Last Temptation from 1994, which nobody really cares about, but thematically it's really cool. Musically, it's really cool. I could talk about Alice Cooper for the rest of my life, quite frankly.
After Alice Cooper, we rolled into Motley Crue, and I did not know what to expect.
I've heard a lot of good things about their more recent live performances.
And I've heard a ton of talk about it being all pre-recorded, right?
If it's
pre-recorded, they did a shitty job because Vince Neil does not sound very good. So, like, if I'm going to pre-record,
he's terrible. He's been terrible for a while.
He doesn't sound really good. He sounds better on some of, like, surprisingly, I thought he sounded better on songs like Live Wire and some of their really old stuff than he did on some of their new stuff. He sounded horrendous on Shout at the Devil. I could hardly even hear what the hell he was even saying.
I saw him 18 years ago in Ottawa, and he, like, even then he was like skipping words.
I'm
like,
yep. Oh, he skips a ton of words.
Oh, your songs are not it's embarrassing. They would have been better off carrying out with John Corabi from the 1994 self-titled album. It's just, that's brutal.
But it was a fun show. They have a lot of good music that's fun.
Def Leppard close?
Def Leppard close. I guess I kind of been watching it. Alice Cooper always opened, and then Def Leppard and Motley Crue would switch nights. And the night we got to see them, Def Leppard closed. And I've seen Def Leppard three times. This is the fourth time. They sound so good. They sound the same as they did back in, I think it was 89, I saw them for the first time. They sound that good. And just super fun show. Really, really good time.
They played Def Leppard was here with Tesla in 2019 in August or July rather. And they were both bands were great. Jeff Keith and Tesla struggling a little bit now, I find, live, but Def Leppard, their vocal harmonies were just pristine. And the obscure track, like, they played like Excitable off Hysteria, and it was fantastic. The crowd was super, and it was sold out. Like, they have aged very well. Joe Elliott would probably be the weaker link in that band, but he still sounds pretty good live.
He does.
He's adjusted his range to, to suit the songs. Much like Rob Halford has with Judas Priest. Like, you won't hear him struggling through a song. He'll just change the way he sings it. They're still phenomenal live. I'd love to see them again. Huge Def Leppard fan.
Definitely a show that I know the tour ended just the other night, but just a great show, and we really had a good time. I do, now that we're talking about favorite albums and stuff, I got a question for you. I know you're the biggest Van Halen fan ever. So what was your favorite Van Halen album?
First one. But that's really hard, too, because I am a huge Sammy Hagar fan.
Yeah.
I love the Van Hagar stuff. Actually, I lost my mind a few weeks ago when they announced that they're finally remastering the Van Hagar albums. They're going to sound so much better. Although the 1991 album, From Lawful Carnal Knowledge, best sounding Van Halen album. The production on that album is phenomenal. The drums, the bass, the guitar, the vocals. Oh, it sounds so good. Now, convert, you know, let's, I'm gonna throw this out there because it's wild. 2 weeks ago, Guns N' Roses played here.
Yeah.
Carrie Underwood opened. You know what Carrie Underwood played?
I saw videos of it. She played freaking Motorhead.
Yeah. I'm a massive Motorhead fan too. That is insane.
My wife, my wife took my daughters to Carrie Underwood in concert like last year. And I mean, it was obviously her country and stuff, but she did play, she played Guns N' Roses. You Could Be Mine, I believe it was.
Oh, that's cool.
That's but great. She's a great performer. She's really
phenomenal. Phenomenal. So one of my other bands that I really, really enjoy, and possibly your favorite band, you told me, Rat.
Yes, they are my favorite band.
This is where we get down and dirty with the glam and hair metal. So what is your favorite Rat album?
Dancing Undercover. I know it's off the board, but that is my favorite.
You know, it's fun. I read the liner notes on one of the greatest hits a few years ago. And I remember Warren DeMartini saying that Dance was a really fun song to play live. And then like the next comment paragraph, Stephen Piercy, it's a real bitch to sing live. And you can totally hear it in both of them, right?
And my favorite song of theirs is even more obscure. I love the song Slip of the Lip. And
yeah,
that's cool. They have a lot of really good stuff, like Way Cool Junior. I mean, they have so many good songs. I could go on and on. But I think when I looked at, I kind of jotted down some of my favorite bands and their favorite album and favorite songs. And like, I'm like, it's so timing though. It's not so much maybe it's their best song, but it's so timing of what's going on in your life and why you like that song and stuff. But yeah, Rat's always been my favorite band. I just from the first time I heard,
how big they were either. In the mid '80s, Rat was one of the biggest bands in the world.
They were. And they had Bon Jovi opening for them.
Yeah, yeah. Now they were like a solar flare. Like they burned out pretty quick. But you know, right around when the Dance album came out, they were absolutely freaking massive.
They were huge on that one, and then Detonator came out, and then they started to fade, and they fade.
Yeah, I've got all their stuff too. I've got even the self-titled album.
Yep.
What's the other obscure one from the late '90s?
Infestation. Collage.
Well, yeah, Infestation was 2010. I remember when that came out, and the single was just blistering.
Yeah,
Eat Me Up Alive. Like, I love that song. But I mean, it wasn't really the same after. You know, actually, they did that really cool song, "Nobody Rides for Free," for that movie soundtrack.
Yep.
But by that point, Robin Crosby was essentially out of the band, and then he had his health problems, and he passed away. So it was never really the same. Actually, not unlike Def Leppard. Def Leppard's still really successful when Steve Clark died, right?
Yeah, but they got a really good... Vivian Campbell is just like a...
Oh, he's phenomenal. Yeah. But the quality of the albums, by a lot of people's belief, wasn't as good after that. And that's certainly the case for Rad. I mean, and now it's just still two versions. Like, Bobby Blotzer had his own. And I don't even know anymore, but it's just a big joke. Like, Stephen Piercy's solo stuff actually is not bad, but I'd love to see a proper Rat reunion and tour again.
Wouldn't it be amazing? Oh, it'd be great.
Oh, we'd have to go to that. That'd be right after the Kiprasov's retirement game.
I would love to see that. That would be really cool. It is something I don't think that we're going to see, though.
Probably not. Yeah.
Well.
Oh, well.
We talked music. We talked hockey. We talked a lot about everything, right?
Yeah, well, you know, tis the season. I mean, after the next, you know, we're only a few weeks away from being full bore hockey again. So it doesn't mean we're not going to slide a music talk here and there and have a drink about it. But
And we'll talk to you.
It's the dog days of summer, and now it's getting darker earlier, and it's getting cooler at night. And I love that part, but it's like, where the hell did it go?
That's crazy. This whole season was just, you know, thank God. Thank God this one's over, though. That was a miserable year last year.
You know what? There's always that renewed hope. No matter how crappy your team's projected to be, whether you have a Connor Bedard like Chicago won their training camp, it's just always new hope. Anything can happen, you know?
I have really good feelings for next year.
Well, that's nice. That's good to hear. That makes me optimistic, too. I'm actually, I mean, the whole addition by subtraction thing, like, as much as I love Trevor Lewis and enjoyed some of Milan Lucic, I mean, those guys moving on, it's good for the team.
It is.
I won't say any more about it, I promise.
Come on. That was your and it's the end of season four and the end of talking about that. I can't believe we're almost to 200 episodes.
That's wild. Well, you're almost to 200. I'm trying to catch up, but
yeah,
it together, I guess it never will. Yeah.
Well, you've been along for the ride now for probably adding your guest ones. You've been in there for 50 of them.
Wow.
I think somewhere right around there, because I think we did 40 shows last season, and you probably guested on 5, 6, so you're approaching 50.
So we should do more next year, because if the math checks out, we did about as many shows last year as the Flames had wins.
So. I'll do a show every day if that's what... I don't know what the hell we would say, but we could do it.
We talk about Rat.
Yeah, we could talk
about Rat.
Yeah.
Great White, you know.
We got all kinds of bands, right? We got all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
We will be back late September for the start of season 5. All new graphics, everything.
Maybe sooner if we have big news. Might do a short show. I mean, who knows? Hanifin could still be traded. Lindholm could be signed. There'll be something noteworthy. Will probably come up.
Our proper
launch of our next season
is scheduled for mid right around that 20th of September. Check out the website flamesunfiltered.ca, and you're going to be able to find out all the scheduling. Other Flames news, and if something happens...
We're just going to rat and roll in the meantime, right?
That's right. That's what we're going to do. Have a few drinks and enjoy what's left of the summer. Flames fans, it's been a fun season, and Kyle and I are excited to be back for season 5 here in a couple weeks.
Cannot wait.
Connected Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. Check out the Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Host Brad Brood is on Twitter at Brad Brood, and host Kyle Lewis is on Twitter at VanLewis14. Like what you hear? Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Flames Unfiltered can be found on all the major podcast players. Want to watch the show? You got it. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group for every show. Subscribe while you watch. Thanks for listening, watching, and interacting. Enjoy the hockey action.
The win column, playoff! Yeah, baby! Playoff! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.